Welcome to Spice World, Between Two Dunes, an inebriated exploration of Willis E. McNelly's Dune Encyclopedia. My name is Derek.
And my name's Mike. Each month we let you, our faithful Spice Worlders, vote on a topic from the Dune Encyclopedia. And this month, Derek, we've got Fremen culture.
Mike, more specifically, we have Fremen cultural development to the year 10191 after Guild.
Oh,
that was a bit of, I mean, to fit on the little voting line, that was a lot of words.
We had space. I could have put that in.
I wanted to keep it concise and trim. But we know a lot about Fremen culture, Mike.
Yeah.
I don't have too much more to reveal to you on that front, nor does the encyclopedia. But this article does have some cool points that we're going to touch on, mainly like an overview of their culture as a whole. There's sort of like a paradox within their culture that I think will be very apparent to you, if that sounds a little intriguing.
Okay.
We'll touch on the value of the Sietch, as well as the Tau, you know, from the Tau origin, the connectedness within all Fremen. And then the biggest thing here is just that, like, Fremen culture was only affected by two, like, instigators from the time they arrived on Arrakis to the present. So we'll unpack that, too.
All right.
So that's what I want to say. I still got some stuff to talk about.
I was going
to
say, like, we really went through a lot of Fremen culture already. I was kind of digging at, like, what's he going to talk about for an hour? Like, what the hell?
Oh, yeah. Like, we did water rights. Yeah, you know the basics. I'm going to outline something a little more the supporting structure in their culture.
Okay.
That kind of defines that.
All right.
It'll all make sense. And honestly, this is going to be a great way for us to connect where we left off with the Zensuni Wanderers back in episode 23.
Great point.
Yeah, we did a deep dive, and they got to Arrakis, and then we stopped. And then we did a little dive of the first time somebody rode a worm was Hrothgar. Right. That was pretty much right around that time. But what happened between then and now?
Okay, you got me.
Yeah,
because the doctor came along and said, we're going to grow plants.
That is precisely one of the things that happened.
But first, we got a wine, right?
We got a good wine.
We got a good wine.
Yeah, you caught this with your eye, Mike.
Oh, just on the way out, we saw it. Sand Creek.
That reminds me of the old Fremen idiom, up Sand Creek without a maker hook.
What is that? No, that is not.
Ancient
You're making that up.
Next book, I promise.
Red Blend 2019. We're not playing by rules anymore during these B2Ds.
Woo!
So we're going back to reds, and you know what? It's a nice change of pace.
Oh, it's just refreshing.
It really is.
It's like a little safety blanket.
A little safety blanket.
I feel so comfortable right now. But man, it's a great heavy flavor.
Yeah.
It definitely like coats my tongue. It's like a little velvet blanket so laid over it. But what do you got? Do you know what's actually I'm tasting in there? Because I could only ballpark some randomness.
It's produced in a region known for sunny weather and water-rich sandy soils that create the perfect climate for this rich, luscious red wine. That's a great word that we don't use enough.
Yeah, we can work it into rotation.
Made from select grapes. So you're tasting select grapes.
That's it.
And more importantly, this classic oak-aged red blend. Oak.
Oh, okay. So, like, I think I can really get that of like almost like a smoky sort of flavor to
it. And with oak, there's often a vanilla association that you can usually taste with an oak.
Oh yeah, like a lot of whiskeys end up going to that.
Bourbons are especially known for that.
That's really cool.
Got an expressive fruit and silky texture, best served with roasted meats and vegetables. Well, I just had some chicken not too long ago, so boom, done.
Perfect. No, yeah, it's got a really heavy flavor, and I just love it. It, like, coats your tongue. The, like, lingering aftertaste is great.
And the art is awesome.
Yeah, what are you seeing?
I just see a bunch of, like, blue and gold little speckled sine waves almost. Oh. It just makes me think of dunes.
Yeah. It makes, like, sort of...
With the blue, you know, the blue eyes.
I was going to say with the blue, it sort of is that line between a sand dune and a wave. Almost an indistinguishable difference between them. Very cool. Glad we got some. Was it Sand Creek?
I definitely recommend this one.
Yeah,
me too. You're right. It's smooth. It's like a little safety blanket. Mm-hmm. It's good.
So I think with that, Mike, let's go all the way back then to Terra.
Oh, I gotta get some like let's go back to the beginning kind of music. Like be like the Doctor Who theme or something.
Little sci-fi mix in there. Yeah. So. You remember the Zensuni Wanderers came from that weird planet? I don't even remember the name of it.
Terra?
Terra, Earth. Right, and they were originally followers of a prophet named Maumath.
Right, I recall Mammoth.
And we broke off from them. We made our own religion. And they broke away, forming a sect that would establish their own religion based on an ultra-conservative notion of living life according to, and I quote, the ways of the fathers.
Ooh.
So that's going to be, you know, their isolation, their internal kind of culture that builds up where they don't acknowledge any outside authority, right?
Mm-hmm.
We adhere to ourselves. We take care of ourselves. It's all going to come from, like, worshiping the father.
They've always sort of been about self...
like their own culture, their own tribe. And
I said self-dependency. It's like independence.
No. Right? So again, we're going to get to this paradox of, like, it's independence and community together. And I'll flesh it out.
All right.
You're going to see exactly what I mean. And honestly, like, when I read it, I was like, oh, it was sort of like an idea you always knew, but it didn't know how to, like, put the words together, how to actually enunciate and get the idea out of my mouth, so to speak.
All right.
Which I'm having trouble doing right now, Mike.
Sand Creek.
So I'm going to blame it on. So the Fremen, they created these institutions which were able to remain stable for thousands of years and were significantly changed by only two events. And, like, you did touch on the first of these events. Mm-hmm. The first was the arrival of Pardak Kynes as the first planetologist of Arrakis.
So I got a quick question here.
Yeah.
Pardak Kynes was our first planetologist on Arrakis.
As per the encyclopedia.
But we've known about Arrakis for how long?
A long time.
And it's got the most important resource in the known galaxy, universe, whatever, however far we span.
Yep.
Why didn't we have one earlier than this?
I got nothing, Mike. I have no idea. Why doesn't Leah have a first name? I don't know. It's one of those things where, like, we can never really pin down of, like, who got the first spice when.
Right.
Like, it's a little bit of a big plot hole here.
The more we go through encyclopedia, the less I am really sure of, like, the origin of spice.
Yeah, the only thing I could maybe think of is, like, the groups that are dependent on spice being the Guild, the Bene Gesserit, maybe to some extent, I don't know what exactly the Talaxlu were up to, but maybe these groups had an interest in stopping any close inspection of the spice or something like that. But I would also think that the overwhelming need and desire for spice from the Imperium would make somebody want to make a synthetic version of it, which would require intense research and development from the point when you found it until you get the job done.
Right.
Because we're told multiple times by Frank in the Dune series and what we're going to read that you can't create synthetic spice, and we have tried, and they've been trying, but it's never been able to.
How long have they been trying then?
Again, we're
not, like,
we're never
going to
get a synthetic.
Wouldn't you
start from the beginning?
Wouldn't you send someone and be like, why don't you investigate this in its source?
Wouldn't there be, like, a city owned by the Imperium? Even if somebody gets the fife, like, we are doing this Imperial research here forever until we figure it out. Agreed. They just don't, Mike.
Also, I was corrected recently that it's pronounced a fief.
I saw that, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I called it a fife a few times. I think every time
we've ever talked about it, because you called it fife, and then I started calling it fife, but it's a fief ultimately.
Yep. I mean, there was that one time when we thought Leda was the last name for a little bit. We got confused on that. That was like, wait a second. fife and fief. I can totally see us butchering that for many an episode.
I know we're going to fuck up all our words, but I still like to let people know when we do or when we realize that we fucked them up.
We are capable of learning. So we know what a fief is now.
Oh, the first thing we learned, Derek.
It's that we can learn. Oh, shit. Silence. Hear that, Brian? But if I can get back, Mike, we only did the first thing. I would like to get to the second point whole reason for this one. So, stable institutions for thousands of years until Pardot, and then the second. You want to take a stab at what the second instance is?
Muad'Dib.
Of course. It's going to be Paul Muad'Dib. Now, Mike, it even says the second was the transfer of governance of Arrakis from the House Harkonnen to House Atreides in 10190, and the subsequent emergence of Paul Atreides as Paul Muad'Dib.
All right, so basically this book.
Exactly. Yeah, the whole thing. It then continues to highlight the difference between the effect that each of those figures had, being Kynes and Paul. Kynes expanded the culture of the Fremen to include hope for a second flowering of Arrakis. Paul Moadib forever changed that culture. Thus, for all intents, the ancient culture of the Fremen ceased with his rise to power.
Oh,
that's going to be this big twist for you right now, Mike. What we're building up to, you know, we have this kind of looming jihad that's going to happen.
The terrible purpose.
The terrible purpose. I got to let
That's going to be a hard one. I don't know if he's going to get out of that.
If he can, or if he can.
Right.
And you do know that the Fremen eventually kind of explode. We've kind of... I've definitely told you more than anything, but we were able to deduce a lot from Irulan's quotes of how she's referring to the Fremen and how they have this position and like Arrakis Awakening and all these things that are superimposed on the Imperium. And like, maybe you wouldn't have put all those pieces together without me like highlighting each of them as we went, but I think it is kind of apparent that that's the end game we're going to get to. So I need to tell you today, Mike. The jihad happens.
I knew it. I knew it.
Paul isn't going to be...
Well, that's the thing. Like, I feel like it's already too far along. We already talked about we passed the point of no return.
I like that he does tell you that, right? I have to kill everyone or it is... I can't stop it.
Right, right.
Now, granted, I think there's still leaves room for Paul to mitigate the disaster. If he can't stop it, it doesn't mean it also has to be the worst.
Also, I guess in another point, I don't think he could have killed everyone in that cave. I think it was already too late by then, too.
This is not the deep dive
for us. Oh, sorry. Okay.
This is the whole conversation.
I just want to talk about Dune, Derek.
I know.
What a crazy... Could Bob kill everybody?
Let's map it out. But... So this is going to highlight for us that, like, Paul coming into that, it ends the Fremen culture from that point on. It isn't what it used to be, and it becomes something entirely different.
Fremen 2.0.
Exactly. For the rest of this article, though, a lot of it's going to refer to the, like, destruction of the Fremen. And I just want to let you know, like, every time it's going to say that, it is more poetic in what it means.
Like
just,
the old Fremen ways.
Yeah, we're not, like, the Fremen aren't going to be gone. We're not going to eliminate them from the universe. So, I won't be able to... You won't have too fine point on where we end up in Book 2 and stuff like that.
Okay.
But I just need to know that they do get out there, they do see some stars, and that has an effect on their culture. Because removing them from Arrakis, that changes the whole equation for what the Fremen are. Mm-hmm. They need that environment to be who they are in a lot of ways. It's sort of dependent on it. So knowing those two are going to have this change, the article continues of, what was that culture then? This culture that Kynes expanded and Paul changed. That's what we're going to dig into right here. And why was Paul Atreides able to first seize control of it and then destroy it? Dun, dun. Which, man, it also makes me think of, like, this is what Jessica's aim has been the whole time.
I was going to say, like, is it just Paul or is it a little bit of Jessica, too?
It's a little bit of Jessica, too. Definitely she's, like, laid the track for us to get this ball or get this cart rolling, right? Mm-hmm. And then after that point, even she loses a little bit of control, it seems. Like, where we are in the book right now, her and Paul are, they're not on the same page.
No.
I don't know what they're each thinking, because again, they haven't talked to each other, but I mean, going places.
When you get older, you grow up, you don't call your mom as much.
Yeah, you grow apart, and where's the time go? So, like, the answer to both of these questions lie once again in the Fremen's religious beliefs and how they interpreted the world around them. From what is understood of the Zensuni wanderers, it can be surmised that their religion was severe in the extreme. It demanded close obedience to an authority figure who must have literally had the power of life and death over his subjects. Such authority does not appear to have been lightly earned. A leader, called the Naib, had to conform closely to his followers' notion of what a leader should be. So we've seen that. It's going to bring Jaimus to mind, obviously. Right, right. Really what we're drawing on there. But I love that perception of, like, you're at once, unquestionable authority, but the people get to decide if you have that unquestionable authority. And as soon as you lose their faith, you have no control. And the whole structure kind of goes into chaos. But you see that sort of like an anarchy and chaos or order and chaos kind of paradox that's there. Mm-hmm. They both exist simultaneously. And it's not like cognitive dissonance for the Fremen. They have sort of a reason why it is this way and how it came to be. So thus, while the Naib had the power of an absolute leader, he could easily be challenged by any of his subjects if his behavior seemed at all inappropriate. From the records left by Parduk Kynes, such challenges seem to have been frequent.
Oh, so really? Yeah. I feel like all the time, like changes in leadership or at least challenges.
And you saw that again reflected with that last chapter with Paul moving on, where like his blade's been challenged many a time.
Right.
We saw Stilgard, this great Naib, the whole way through going home. The youth were like nipping at his heels of like, people are ready to challenge him. He kept them in like, I can maim everybody here. But even he was aware of how close he was to being toppled each night. When Stilgard toppled his own Naib, followed him out into the desert in the night to challenge him, right?
Right.
It's very weird, but you do it for the good of the tribe ultimately, right? Too, right?
Because it's always for the good of the tribe.
Always is, even though you're killing their leader. So weird, but you're like being like, no, there's greater potential. Like there's a greener field, essentially, right. You know, if we go over to the other side. So diving into this paradox of order and anarchy. The Fremen held this paradoxical notion of social order. The leader of any group was supreme, but only if everyone who belonged to that group wanted him to be. It appears, then, that a balance of order and anarchy coexisted in Fremen culture. Clues as to the nature of that balance exist, the most significant clue being the Fremen's view of Arrakis itself. So you want to you got any guesses as to how that would build up to like how Arrakis teaches them this lesson of order and anarchy?
Oh man, god damn it. I don't know.
You need two words, Mike. Two words, one creature.
Sandworm?
Shai Halu.
Oh
yeah, sandworm. Sandworm exactly. Should be it is the...
It's not that chaotic because you can always predict it to the point where, like, they can actually, like, summon them as an Uber and, like, you know...
Yeah, but you're so close to, like, what you need to pull on, though. The two things you just kind of highlighted. All right, so to the Fremen, the planet was Shai Halud. And this is with a capital S and a capital H.
That's okay? Good. The planet
was Shai Halud, the deity or spirit of Arrakis. It stood for the sandworm, which was the essence of all sandworms. Shai Halud was the old man of the desert, old father eternity, and grandfather of the desert.
So. I love that, like... I feel like I always interpreted those names as meaning the sandworm, instead of the sandworm being representative of this greater, like, idea.
Mm-hmm.
I like that so much better.
Yeah, you sort of, like, honestly, it's like the planet and the sandworm are the same thing. They're sort of like different metaphors.
Like an avatar of the planet.
Exactly, yes, that is exactly what it is. Now, the sandworms of Arrakis, Mike, are both the bane and the boon of Arrakis. A man walking in the open desert had to fear attracting them because a worm would surely devour him. But sandworms were also the Fremen's chief mode of transportation. Skillfully caught and ridden, a sandworm could transport many Fremen hundreds of kilometers in a short time. Like you were just saying, yeah, we ride it, but he also is what destroys us. We have to fear and like walk around him and cater to him, but we can also call him and tame him and, you know, use him. Like, it's both things at once. Even more important, sandworms supplied the Fremen with a major ingredient of their rites. A small sandworm drowned in water produced the water of life, a poison which, drunk by a reverend mother, became a powerful narcotic.
Oh, my God, those poor worms.
Now, there's a really huge significance in that, too. This narcotic, Mike, in turn, was used by a Fremen Siech in its Tau orgies. As several scholars of ancient religions point out, the nature of the water of life is consonant with practices of many ancient peoples who, in one form or another, kill their gods and digest their bodies.
Oh,
so this is a practice. Think of Christianity. We take the body of Christ, the blood of Christ.
Yeah.
Consume fair. It. Like, it is a common thing in a lot of different places. I think we've brought this up once before, but the Romans used to, there was like propaganda attacking the Christians before Christianity took over. They called them cannibals. And it was because of that, like misinterpreting that rite as literal versus like,
flesh of their own.
Exactly. Yeah. Or of their leader and this and that. So I think that's great here where we do it of our worm, but like, it's even more significant where like, it is literally the worm that is literally your God of like Very cool. And that you're willing to do that to it. So the point is, while the Fremen were more than ready to stand in awe of their god, they were equally willing to use it, even to the point of putting the god's living form to death. Thus, the Fremen there did not appear to be in any contradiction in total submission to authority, whether human or godlike. On the one hand, the open and questioning of authority, or even callous destruction of it on the other.
Yeah.
So again, like, that's how you get past that cognitive dissonance of, like, supreme leader that I can overthrow at any moment. Total submission and total subjugation. Like, they're okay with each, and they understand it. It's sort of the way of life on Arrakis. Now, each of these seeming extremes is part of a whole to the Fremen, and it would appear that in each, the opposite also existed. One could conclude that for the Fremen, order was anarchy, and anarchy was order. This view would eliminate in their minds at least the apparent contradiction in their behavior toward human leaders and gods alike.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Right? Because, again, they're also the kind of people that, like, they threw off their old prophet. They feel, you know, they found their religion, their way through the world. They don't care what the Imperium worships. Eventually, they're going to put their religion on top of that, too.
I've got a question here. Mm-hmm. So we talked about the Zensuni Wanderers and their trip across the galaxy.
Their magical mystery tour.
The magical mystery tour.
Yes.
So at what point did they stop becoming the Zensuni and start becoming the Fremen?
As soon as they got to Arrakis, the Fremen, they were free men, finally. That was the end of... Every other time, we were brought by the Sadokar, or we were forced on place. This is when we paid the guild to get here, intentionally, to finally be free of everyone.
Gotcha.
Because we paid the guild to hide us. We paid the guild to keep us hidden. It was an ongoing bet. What's that?
Okay, now I'm just having another thought here.
Yeah, let it out, Mike.
We paid the guild... Like, hey, we need a safe place to be. Guild's like, sure, we'll take you to our ultimate resource for, like, how we get around places.
Yep.
Really?
Really. Because they told them we were going to Arrakis.
You should just give them a little corner of two pile and be done with it.
No, because I think there's also a measure of, like, the guild wanted a way to get spice back-channeled.
You think they knew that if they put the Fremen there...
I think there had to be something.
I don't know.
Well, you know, you put them in the years. It's in the year 7,000 when we drop them off, Mike. Like, we've been getting spice for a while.
Right.
Yeah, I think maybe that's part of the
deal. I just think that I wouldn't want people to know about this planet. They're like, this is a trade secret.
Arrakis?
Yeah.
I think that the guild revealed it when the Chome was settled.
Oh, I thought they just...
They threw spice out, and I believe it only told me they revealed spice. I imagine they would have to reveal where the spice comes from, unless they're going to be the ones harvesting it.
Which I guess they wouldn't be doing that.
It doesn't seem like that would be. Granted, and we're like, both you and I are wildly speculating. It's like we have nothing to really pull from to actually describe how this all goes down, because, again, no one wrote it down. No one.
That's infuriating.
But that seems like the best bet I can give you is, like, the guild brought them here with some sort of idea of, like, this will be how we get spice. And then not ever caring.
It's like, a good idea, though. It's like, tell you what, we'll bring you here. Like, no matter what people tell us, we won't ever, like, send you away.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very powerful bargain, clearly.
Although they didn't start paying off the... Well, I guess, wait, how long have the guild been...
You're talking about paying off for the satellites, which only would have happened from Pardot on.
Right, so then why didn't the Emperor have, like, things going on before then, like weather satellites? Like, knowing it's capable of, like, eliminating those storms. Sorry. I don't mean to just, like, keep throwing wrenches at you, man, but, like, I just have these questions of, like, why or why not?
Yeah.
Like, Pardot shouldn't be the, like, everything started with him. It should have been way, way earlier, millennia.
For planetologist part, I agree. I don't know why for... Well, clearly, Pardot wasn't there to investigate the spice, though, either. Like, that wasn't his main thing. And the other thing that the Imperial had on there were botanical testing stations. So they were just trying to grow shit. Why the guild wouldn't ever want to put satellites in... Okay. Okay, I think I got it.
All right,
I got, give it to me straight. Okay, Mike. If the worms need the desert to do their thing, you can't turn the planet into like an ocean world or a green planet.
Okay.
That's out of the question.
Right.
The guild would be able to see bits of the future. Maybe they know that endgame, and that's why they adamantly avoid it. They don't let you put a single thing in there because it leads down that path to a green planet, and that gets rid of spice, which will add. It's abhorrent to them. Maybe that could be it.
Oh man,
I'm pulling some strings.
Okay,
that makes a little more sense to me. Of like, because I forgot to factor in they can see the future. And
how much can they see?
It gets questionable. Paul's gonna, this is gonna be me. I have to reveal some shit for the end of the book. Like, Paul's gonna do some cool future stuff, and I believe the guild puts their two cents in at the end of Dune here.
Oh, interesting.
So we'll get there when we do.
It's like, I can verify that.
Yeah, I did that on purpose. I'm gonna stick with that for right now. Of like, they have some prescient view and are hedging their bets based on what they see. But they would also be the kind of person that only takes the easy path. They go down that path that Paul would never tread. Mm-hmm. And they only go on that path. So like, they're not adventurous in their vision or like what they're looking for either. So like, they have a much narrower kind of view than Paul does.
Okay.
So these could be the possibilities that sort of give them why they would make this decision over that decision. If I may,
yeah,
good to double back. All right. That was a good little diatribe though. So this is all breaking off of them killing their gods.
Both literally and figuratively.
This view, moreover, gives an important insight into their ultimate vision of the major forces in their lives, starting with Shai Hulud and ending with the most elemental natural forces of Arrakis. The Fremen believed that all were utterly indifferent toward whether they lived or died.
Whoa.
And I think that means,
holy
like,
shit.
The Imperium, nature, gods, none of them care if we live or die. Mm-hmm. Now, such forces simply existed. Shai Hulud, whether literal sandworm or personified Arrakis, might bring harm or good to the Fremen, but whatever the end result, it was not on Shai Hulud's mind to do either. To put it another way, if a Fremen said a certain death was the will of Shai Hulud, he or she did not mean that Shai Hulud wanted someone to die. Instead, to a Fremen, these words simply mean, that is the way things are. So, like,
Shai Hulud is as Shai Hulud does.
The will of Shai Hulud. It's sort of like that. The worm doesn't care. He was just rolling over.
Right.
If he crushes seven people, like he didn't even notice, probably. We'll go about his
work. Or has the concept of a person.
Exactly. Like, we were just there. You're just no more than sand beneath them. And they don't have a good care of concern for your low well-being. So I love that's like going to be our core of the Fremen worldview, essentially. They were basing that their religion grew of. Everything would have like kind of come out of that once they arrived on Arrakis. So that's an interesting bit, which would be different from the what we call Zensuni. Mm-hmm. Like, this kind of view didn't get hammered in. It wasn't the same on Poratrin or I can't remember what the other desert world that was like they were on beforehand. That was
it wasn't
like
Harmonthep, was it?
No, Harmonthep never exists. That one, you know, poof, disappeared. We don't know what happened on Harmonthep. Like, cool. That's in the Caladan system for some reason.
I'll find out.
So let's move on to sort of the value in the CH, essentially. Kind of build up why that's so important to Fremen life.
Okay.
So the Fremen did not, however, conclude that there was no value or meaning in their lives. Instead, they created both value and meaning by devoting all their ambitions and energies to the survival of the Siege, the center of Fremen society. Mm. So the individual in the community,
right?
This is sort of it. Like, the individual kind of creates the identity for themselves by what they do for their community. It's very much like, ooh, I live through bettering the community, and that is where I derive like all meaning of my life. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, I can recognize that I'm insignificant. I will not make a mark on this universe. I will be gone like the wind, but I will be responsible for this much water being added to my tribe's coffers, for this child being born and being trained, for saving the life of this person.
Like a weird, like, bit of spiritual accountability in a way.
Yeah. Of a greater good.
Right.
Of this, like, where you fit in a chain, mm-hmm, more than like just you.
And, but it's not like the traditional, like, you know, when people say like the greater good, it's always like in a weird sort of indoctrination.
How so?
Like, you know, let me give you a hot take for like Hot Fuzz. Like when they do like the greater good with like the cult in the background, it's like it's an indoctrinated kind of thing. It's like this is the way things have to be to make things, you know, better ultimately.
Yeah.
Like even if you don't truly believe it or you know it's just morally wrong, it's just like, but it's for the greater good. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But like with this, it literally is like it's the opposite. I'm doing this because I don't think there's meaning anywhere else. I'm doing this because it does have meaning.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, what is unique about the Fremen where I think you have to kind of buy in that it's definitely fiction is that we're assuming everyone here is a good actor. Like everyone, there's no like lazy Fremen who's just like, I'm on a coast because Farouk does such good sweeping. I don't need to sweep as much.
I mean, he does the best sweeping.
He does do the best, but he does the best sweeping because he will just do it individually.
Right, right, right.
That doesn't mean somebody else won't try to do their best sweeping. And I think that is sort of inherent in their whole culture where we never assume somebody would not try hard.
I want...
Whether or not they're capable of parody with each other.
I want a Dune fanfic with Farouk and his rival sweeper.
His rival sweeper?
Yeah.
He'd probably off him in the night, follow him out.
Oh my god. Dueling with broomsticks.
Yeah. Dueling broomsticks. Just with sweeping them. It'd be great.
Dueling battle sets would be dope.
Yeah. Oh, those gyroscopes, though. So this continues on with, while members of every Sietch called themselves Fremen, that name had less meaning to them than the name of the Sietch each belonged to.
Ooh.
So that's not even really a word that they identify with. That's a word we project onto them.
That's really interesting.
Because do you remember the Fremen word they use for them? They are the Miser, M-I-S-R.
Oh,
and that's like the word for the people. And even that isn't Zen Sunni. It's just sort of like a broader swath of them. And there is no accurate way of determining how many Sietches existed, even in the time of Paul Moadib. Except for his own Sietch and any that might threaten its survival, no individual Fremen was interested in how many others existed.
Wow.
They don't care. If you're not from my neighborhood, doesn't matter. And if you're not a direct threat to my neighborhood, that's the only time I would care.
Damn.
And that's sort of like, I feel like would be an adaptation out of Security, where like they are cells of people. If you catch one Fremen, you can never find all Fremen because they don't know where they all are.
That's interesting. That's actually very cool. That's very clever.
That's a great way to survive. And that is all the Fremen try to do, right?
You just made me think of something. I wonder what Mr. Rogers' neighborhood would be like on Arrakis.
You're like, he would come in from the outside. It would be a door seal.
Yep, door seal comes up.
Yeah. He would look terrifying in a full steel suit, couple Chris knives.
Takes off his nose piece, like instead of his sweater and everything.
Yeah, and goes, oh, didn't see you there. And it's just like pulling the knife out of its sheath of like wiping blood off it. Welcome to the neighborhood.
Oh, God.
Drinking from his cash pocket.
The mailman is always just a smuggler. I want this.
The train's a worm being driven by some Fremen on it.
But it still has the same music.
Oh, yeah. It's magical.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got to be whimsical and great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's a thing. I don't think his name would be Mr. Rod. Oh, it'd be Mr. Rothar's neighborhood.
Mr. Rothar?
Rothar was the first one to ride a worm.
Oh, God.
Mr. Rothar.
I want that so badly. Yeah. Oh, my God. And the little fantasy land, imagination land, or whatever it is, the castle and King Friday.
Yeah, what is that going to be? Is that going to be like the palace?
It's going to be a little potty shop hand puppet.
Yeah. The emperor.
Yeah.
The emperor comes in. I love it. Love it. All right. Hitting pause on that one. Right.
Sorry.
That's okay. So, again, Fremen don't know where the other Sietches are. Moreover, it now seems clear that the Fremen were masters in hiding the existence of their Sietches from all offworlders. Thus, no records exist. It is deduced, however, that many hundreds of these units did exist, and that each Sietch was capable of containing many thousands of people. We know tens of thousands is what you want to reach for.
There's just no way to know how many Fremen there are.
No, exactly. If anything has been hammered into us, that is the one point that is true. We have been given wildly different numbers by everybody. And yeah. It just keeps going up and up and up. I think just based off how its numbers, you know, it's millions. Mm. Millions and millions of Fremen are on this planet. And they're not all in contact with each other. Like, I wonder if there's just one Sietch who has never even heard of the Harkonnens. They've just been, like, so far down the south for so long. Like, what are you guys talking about? There's other people? So all Fremen defined their lives by membership in a Sietch. It literally gave one a place in the world. Thus, to commit an act which brought banishment from the Sietch was to commit psychological as well as physical suicide.
Like, whoa.
There's no greater punishment.
Right.
Like, because if I
remove... Or shame.
Yeah. Combined, like, shame for your family, too. But just imagine me pulling all the purpose out of your life. You have nothing driving you anymore. Like, you can't contribute to this.
Damn.
You are now literally, for the first time in your life, on your own.
I mean, I guess you can't... I guess that suicide is a contribution in a way where at least you can give your water back.
Ooh, if they collect it... Well, if you are banished, they probably don't want your water, depending on why you are banished. There can be a number of things that go into that. In all things, the good of the Sietch was the final determinant in behavior. Those actions which furthered the good were to be encouraged, while those that threatened the good were to be more than discouraged.
Okay.
Such actions inevitably led to the death of the person responsible, whether or not that person realized the implication of those actions. Like Arrakis, the Sietch punished ignorance. There was simply no room for the uninformed.
Ooh,
that's a pretty harsh line.
So this is making me really think of how much of a chance they took on Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And like what that meant for Liet or for Stilgar.
And maybe paint somebody as on the right side of history a little bit.
You know what? I've come around to Jameis.
I think
like, honestly, just his role within the history books as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone will ever fully appreciate what he tried to do.
No. And I mean, it's very, it's well couched in history like Yui's is. We're like,
yeah.
You can describe it this one way. And then when you watch it play out, you can be like, oh, but you could interpret this other entirely way and see where both parties are coming from. And that it was just miscommunication like everything else in Dune.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just people not talking or talking past each other.
Yui and Jessica just barely missing each other. I should force that out of them.
Yeah, this whole book is just about communication. That's really the underlying thing. Just talk, people. We need to talk more. But yeah, I like this. I love this like cold-heartedness to it. And that it comes from a good place in a way. I'm just like, no. So many people will die because of how high the risk is on this planet. Since all things were measured in terms of how they aided or hindered the survival of the Sietch, all decisions made by its members were made in terms of yes or no. Survival had no room for maybe.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It was really just yes or yes, because they don't like to say no.
Right, yeah, that's true. They have a tough time telling you that.
It's like that movie Yes Man, but with Fremen.
So it's just the same movie, right?
Yeah.
They did that so
I think it's just much more violent.
Yeah. It ends a lot more death over minor insults and wasting of water. Because isn't that set in like California?
I think it might be, yeah.
I don't think they would take it well. all the palm trees, they would stop and stare at each one. That's my whole sietch. Now,
why are you giving me that look?
Spice Worlders, I hope you enjoy this.
What does that mean?
In his notes on his father, Paul Moadib, Leto states that the Naib of the Sietch that first found Paul and the Lady Jessica, the Fremen named Stilgar, was challenged by his own men for not putting both of them to death immediately.
Wait, I need to unpack that. Wait, would you? Wait.
His notes about his dad, Paul.
So, Leto's a historian now, too.
Leto gets to write some notes, too, Mike.
Are we going to have some, like, that's so cute.
Down the
road. Are we going to have some, like Irulan-style openings, but from, like, Leto's perspective of, like, notes on my father?
No, he ends up writing a hip-hop musical about his father's reign with all Fremen actors.
I don't know if I believe that one.
He won't be as notorious.
Oh, that's great.
As, but you and I, who'd we just meet?
Yeah.
Or we just heard of. We haven't met him yet.
Yeah, we haven't met him yet, but Leto the Second. Oh, but they just call him Leto, not Leto.
Yep.
Ah, that's good.
Yeah.
So. That makes me a little sad. I think Baby Leia and Leto, I think they're going to be my favorite ones going forward. They're just so cute when they're little.
They are.
It's hard to not like them.
Leto. But I thought you would appreciate that. I knew our Spice Worlders would appreciate your reaction to that. So this continues on. These men did not dislike the two off-worlders. They simply saw no advantage to keeping them alive, and thereby depriving the Sietch of the water from their bodies. Just the exact point you kind of made. Yeah. I'm like, shouldn't we take that water?
Yeah.
Exactly. That
is, I'd be a great Fremen.
Okay.
I'd be a great Fremen. Okay. We've been camping enough where I know I'd be a bad Fremen.
First week was pretty rough. Jameis would not have taken us. We could have learned the ropes, but maybe he should have killed us immediately. lost my place.
Sorry.
That's okay. Further water. So, in this same passage, Leto points out that Paul did finally have to duel one of the Fremen who refused to delay a decision despite Stilgar's wishes.
So this is all coming from Leto, like writing on history.
Yeah, he's one of our kind of sources for this document. Kind of some record that he left.
But this is interesting though, because it's just the point I was making about how like history's going to paint Jameis a little differently. Like, never going to really know what he did,
mm-hmm.
and to the extent of that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
like that. I feel like that sentence just doesn't quite adequately represent the event.
No. And I think we can read into this a few different ways of one, like, okay, that's just how the author wanted to write it out. But I want to throw that one aside for the literal reason. And I would like to look at it as like a...
Maybe he just doesn't know.
No, of like maybe there's a propaganda reason for why we want to... Sort of the same reason we paint Yui black and let Yui remain black. It's a good narrative for the histories. Maybe we need Jameis to be the sort of fall guy. Because then again, you got to set up that Paul beat him without bleeding. Right. That was part of sealing his deal, and I think that matters. And then the sort of a mythical story of how Jameis doing that sort of like sent Jameis to the Alamal Mithal, and was like he did the thing he was, you know, that was the whole purpose of Jameis's life, I think, right. From the Fremen point of view. They see that as an ends to the means kind of deal. That was what Jameis was for. Jameis bettered the tribe by doing that, didn't he?
Yeah, so far.
So far, yeah. I mean, granted, if we go by what I told you in the beginning, he did kill the Fremen, but he changed the Fremen. But we do destroy their culture because of what Jameis did, technically.
Oh, Jameis, buddy.
Ooh, but hey.
But if he hadn't done it, what else would have happened?
I was going to say, from his point of view, I would pass the buck and be like, well, if Yui didn't do what he did and then wash my hands clean, Yui's standing there and be like, well, Jameis, if I'm worth it, didn't do what he did.
On Yui. Did you just bring up El Muerte?
Yeah, I think Yui would point the stick to El Muerte and be like, well, if he didn't kill the Duke, I wouldn't have had to do what I did. We just keep following this back. Until we get back to the Battle of Corrin when the Atreides and this whole thing starts.
Oh my god.
So we've gone over a brief overview. We did the paradox.
Yeah.
We've done Sietch.
Yeah.
We get to my favorite part now. Okay. It's orgy time, Mike.
It's orgy time.
It's orgy time.
That's not something that I feel like I'm going to say very often in my life.
I so rarely get to. Really, the Tao of the Sietch is what we're going to talk about.
All right.
That's always what it really is referring to.
Is that the name of it officially?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's like that phenomenon that occurs. The orgy is sort of being like the Roman use of the word orgy. So like them all, partying together, letting all their energies out. And then the Tao is that sort of that connection that they all feel. That's that phenomenon. That's the Tao of it all. So the Tao, the Sietch, can be called its oneness. The overwhelming unity that raised the Fremen's sense of community to a height rarely found in other societies. So this is like sort of that last piece of the puzzle for really explaining, again, maybe why they're all good actors. Because I've been in your mind, like, I am you in some way.
I just, when you ever use the term actor, I always feel weird. I'm like, what do you mean?
Oh, I mean, it's used in like a political sense of like, okay, a good actor in like, let's say you're trying to like get everyone to vote for something and somebody is being a bad actor, meaning like they're holding out to get something personal for them or whatever. Like they're not acting in good faith on the agreement, okay, we establish for how this should be operating. That is like what a good actor or a bad actor is. So Fremen culture has all these orders and rules to it. A good actor is going to abide by those without needing like to be rewarded or pressured to do so.
Okay, gotcha.
A bad actor will not and will do something selfish. Fucking
bad actors, man.
Bad actors. It's someone acting in bad faith to like our community agreement. Are you aware of like the social contract?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of like that, of like, okay, adhering to the social contract. The ones that break it, bad actors. That is, okay, what I mean by that.
Gotcha. I'm glad we cleared that up.
Yeah,
I'm sure I'm not the only one who was confused. No, by
if,
that.
Throw it out in the beginning, Mike. If I remember to bring up birds, I mean, Grant, maybe you didn't know I was going to use it so extensively, but.
I mean, I go into these episodes not knowing anything that we're going to be talking about.
So true.
I'm literally here just with a glass of wine, like, all right, I got a word at the end of the episode. That's about it.
Glass of wine and a microphone. My name's Mike. Your job's pretty sweet.
It's not bad.
Okay. So this oneness went far beyond the belief that the good of the Siege was above all other considerations. The Tao contained a mystical dimension that transcended time and place. Since each Siege kept a community reservoir in which all members kept their water, the Siege was literally the guardian of the most precious commodity for life on Arrakis. You know, you're guarding that cash basin,
yeah, that's
down in the basement where we're killing makers and doing all sorts of fun stuff, but we're not swimming in it. Because remember Jessica, she wanted to touch it so bad, yeah, but she couldn't. She's like, no, I'm not allowed to do that. More important, however, is the fact that these reservoirs included the water recovered from the dead bodies of members of the Siege. Mm-hmm. Fremen did not put water so obtained into the reservoirs lightly. We'll know that we were down there for the whole ceremony with James.
I mean, like, they had to do a ceremony for it.
Mm-hmm. And that was, like, the last thing you do through the whole thing.
Mm.
It was respect for the departed that allowed for such treatment. Mm. Dishonored men or women would never, after death, be afforded this honor. Thus, in a very real sense, the Siege preserved all members, living and dead, for the water from the dead would be ingested by all living Fremen, and at some future, they, too, would make their contribution.
Wow.
So I love that.
And it's so cool, too, that like they put such a value on that social contract over the water itself, mm-hmm, even though that water is what keeps them going within this harsh environment.
I think it's why the contract is sort of over the water. Yeah. It's like it's their greatest resource. It'd be, you know, like whatever the most,
yeah,
the most would it finite resource or the rarest resource in it that you're, mm-hmm, dependent on, like.
Right.
We're going to put everything in. We're built our religion it's around
community
this.
Community is that resource.
And then I think the obviousness. So like even you and I know like the water we drink was once like dinosaur urine. Like it's gone through that whole cycle for it. You know, that's like a funny thing, yeah, to think of. But for them to know that it's such a closed circuit and for it to be such a closed circuit because like the distillation happens in there. Like,
yeah,
that vapor.
I mean, like it's almost impossible not to find something spiritual in that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We're like, for us, though, it's like the water has to go through this crazy, it leaves us, has to go into the sky, has to filter through the crust of the earth.
All around the world. Yeah.
Like, it's just in Siege. They distill it in this one room. They pour it back into this room. You drink it. Like, it's a much more closed system where, like, it's...
When you're out in the desert, it's your body, it's your system.
Yeah, yeah. Even then, it's like a closed thing. It's just such a more awareness of every step the water takes than I feel like we get to have.
Mm-hmm.
And then knowing that, yeah, your family is in it. Of like,
that's kind of cool to think, too. Like, if you're just alone in the desert, you're like not really alone. Like, your Siege is with you.
Ooh, I didn't consider that. Yeah. Just
that's
like,
really cool.
Like, especially if you brought that liter jar of water. Like,
yeah. Weird.
And I wonder if there is like a major taboo of drinking another Siege's water at all.
I bet there would be.
Yeah, like even sharing, yeah, water must be like a little like you really better need, well, this.
There's more value in the name of their Siege than, mm-hmm, the Fremen, yeah, name colloquially. Mm-hmm. Like, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's huge. And that's what you identify with and keep secret. Very cool. And just that it permeates everything. Now, it should be remembered that from the earliest history, the Fremen race revered the ways of the fathers. In addition, because of the acute shortage of water on Arrakis, the literal water of the fathers was drunk by all members of the Siege.
Water of life?
Yeah, no. That's like, I think it's just our water in general.
Oh, just
it's
water
all,
in general.
It's all like another name for that. Water of the Fathers. Water of life is the water of life. Thus, the Tao of the Siech was at the very heart of the balance the Fremen maintained between their spiritual beliefs and the physical necessities placed on them by their environment.
Okay.
So they have all these competing things in this environment out to get them. To drink the water of the Siech was to participate in the Tao. So that, I guess, almost sort of an answer to our question of, like, sharing with the Sieches. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah. Because it is bringing you into the oneness, even outside of that ceremony, it seems. Kind of like you just said, the awareness of it.
So does every Sieche have a Reverend Mother?
Yes.
Wow, there's that many Reverend Mothers.
I would say they would attempt to. Granted, because we were prepared to not have a Reverend Mother.
Right.
You know, it happens for sure. They try to, it would seem.
I wonder how many there are on Arrakis currently.
I gave you that answer earlier. No one, even the Fremen, don't know, Mike.
It's so cool. So there might be a rogue Bene Gesserit out there. Well, they wouldn't be Bene Gesserit. They'd be a rogue Reverend Mother, though.
In which case, I don't think they would be, because that would be bad for the tribe.
Yeah.
There would be no use in a super old lady who couldn't help. I don't know. Maybe they don't break. I was thinking, like, why don't they break the rules for the sake of the tribe? Wouldn't that be something? But I guess it's the same reasons they don't on the outside of, like, it might bring attention. They would see it as a demon, too. They clearly don't like Aaliyah.
I think that the Fremen have way better discipline than the Bene Gesserit.
Oh, most certainly. Okay. You think they rub off and then, like, the Bene Gesserit, well, I'm going to follow the rules now. Yeah. Now that I see the point of them. Yeah. I think you're right. I like that they change the Bene Gesserit. The Bene Gesserit don't change them. Mm-hmm. That's the way to go. Now, in addition, the Tao Orgy of Oneness also brought the Siech into a physical intimacy as well as a spiritual one. The visions of the Tao Orgy showed them the ways of their fathers. And I think we're going to keep using the ways of their fathers to kind of just hark back to, like, their history,
right,
their heritage, just sort of like all that's meaning there. Here was the Fremen's ultimate bond with the past, present, and future, and it could only be obtained through participation of the entire Siech.
Wow.
Yeah. I think this is sort of like...
you need just those multiple minds.
Yeah. I think it's like mining Bitcoin. You need as many processors going as you can. Like,
I mean, that's kind of a good analogy, actually.
Right? Because Bitcoin's made up. This is all made up. But yeah, like you need the more, it's probably like the stronger and more powerful it is or something like that. They get this sort of like hive mind mentality going, which is awesome. Now, the ultimate destruction of Fremen culture was inevitable because of its dependence on two elements that were inexorably changing: the harsh nature of the planet Arrakis and the Fremen belief that this was how things were to be, and the Fremen isolation from all outside influence. We're seeing each of those slip away. Very obviously by us bringing outworlders in. How many outworlders have we brought in now, Mike?
Three.
Very good. I just want to make sure you count a card up, but not yet. It's a
2-for-1 deal. Yeah.
But we're at 3 now. We did 1 like 60 years ago. We've done 2 now. What's going to happen in 10 more years, Mike? We have an immigration problem. We need to build a wall.
Leah as a fourth?
No. Well, we didn't bring her in. She's born, I think, technically Fremen. I'll give you. It's an asterisk on it, but like...
We haven't gotten to that chapter yet.
No, but she was born after they were brought in, so I think that makes her Fremen. I don't think you get to make a case that she's an outworlder. She never has been born outworld.
True.
Yeah?
True.
But the other ones are a problem. Now, the other thing is, again, let's go back to the first part here. It's the harsh nature of the planet Arrakis and the Fremen belief that this was how things were to be. What is Pardak Kynes' plan?
It's going to change Arrakis, man.
It's to change Arrakis. So inevitably, that's going to eat away at the foundation of your whole, like, culture.
They let 3 people in and all 3 of them fucked up their culture.
I would say 1 fucked it up. I think Pardot's was a positive. Pardot, he just gave them hope and a plan and a unity that Paul manipulated. Without Pardot, Paul couldn't have succeeded.
Right. I mean, that's like, yes, no. Because, like, what happened? Like, what's your ultimate goal with Pardot? To make it hospitable?
To make, to like, yeah.
Like, to the point of, like, is okay. that going to disrupt, like, Melange and Spice? Is that going to disrupt the Fremen and how they're...
So, key to the Fremen plan here, there will always be a desert for the worms. They're never going to turn the whole planet green.
Right.
That's anathema to them. They're going to pull the poles, and they're going to leave the middle band solid desert for the for Shai Hulud. But okay. they want open water for them.
Yeah,
they
want to make it. Makes but sense.
I'm kind of like
Shai Hulud's not going to go to the open. Oh, maybe the little soundtrack would.
Yeah, but Shai Hulud, he's nowhere near. Hates moisture in the air, Mike. Hates it so much. But I was just thinking, I think you kind of won me over to the opposite bit of like, no, Pardot did. He poisoned them. That was like a time bomb ready to go off. Like, once you do get that green, you've eliminated the harsh environment. You've eaten away just as much as bringing outsiders eats away at one thing. Changing the environment of Arrakis changes the Fremen inevitably because they are
and shaped... their philosophy on Arrakis and Shai Hulud in general.
Yeah, because the whole thing is contingent upon this planet not caring if I live or die.
Right.
If this planet is any kind of hospitable or gracious to me, that is completely undone or taken away. You lose your edge and you're no different than the Fremen were on Poratrin.
How did he win them over so well then? We talked about it, but I don't feel like it makes sense anymore.
Knowing how ingrained
their philosophies are.
But the intoxicating idea of hope. You don't see how that could burn like a wildfire.
I mean, like, yeah,
and
then
and again, too. And it was only the youth that he persuaded. Because when Stilgar takes over, that is a part of like, it's sort of like an Arab Spring within the Fremen, where they're like, the youth are stepping forward to be like, the elders don't understand how important this plan is. We'll bring this further faster.
Pardot was, he was cunning.
In what way? Because like when you say that, I imagine like kind of him acting in bad faith again to use that word. But I don't think that was what he was coming at. But I want you to just like, how are you flesh that out for me?
I mean, because like if you focus on the youth, like they're going to be the future tomorrow, you know?
Yeah.
If you focus on them and if you can win them, then you win. You don't have to convince anyone else.
Oh God. Okay, Mike, I agree.
I'm gonna have to clean that up later.
You want to carry it? I thought you want to clean it up.
No, that's fine. We'll go. Keep going.
So, Kind's cunningness.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Take a stab at that for me.
Just, okay, the fact that, like, if you convince the youth, then it doesn't matter, like, who else you convince, because they're going to be the ones that are making the choices, like, in the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And
they're going to be the ones that are asserting themselves for the good of the tribe.
Okay, so you're thinking he targeted them intentionally?
That's what I'm thinking.
Sure. We're never going to see it, so, like, if you want that to be, that could be your little version of it.
I think he's so smart, it'd be silly not to assume that.
Okay. And that would, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's who you would start teaching shit to anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he just happened to be, I guess, like, a really great teacher. That enough people were, like, really passionate, these followers of his. Jaimus. Stilgar, like 100% on board from that day forward. So I don't know how Pardot did it, but he did it, and he did it flawlessly. So knowing these two influences are going to be what's eroded over time. The first of these elements, the nature of Arrakis, began to change when Pardot Kynes was able to convince a group of Fremen that Arrakis could be made to bloom again. The very notion that the Fremen could change the face of the planet added alien concepts to the Fremen view of life. So it's very much sort of like what we were just discussing there. Mm-hmm. Now, this continues on to, we met the Fedaiken, right?
Yeah.
We met some first ones. So, Mike, they have a chant. Do you know what their chant is?
Oh,
their battle cry? You might know it in English if you don't know it in Spanish. I was going to say Spanish. Sorry. I'm not even going to defend that one, but that's my language go-to. But it would be Arabic. Have you ever heard of Long Live the Fighters?
No.
It'll be on like it's on the Dune Reddit. They use it for like their CH. It's like the big call for Dune.
Okay.
So the most famous Fremen battle cry. Yahya Chahuda. Oh, Chuada. Okay. Yahya Chuada. Right. Brought with it implication that the fighters were fighting to avoid something, not to gain something. So this is a really cool little bit. So this is the rallying cry of the Fedaiken when they go into battle, and it means long live the fighters. So I think it's interesting that, like, so this is, again, this is after the culture has been affected. This is, like, very much Paul affecting this culture, right?
Okay.
And now it's, like, these people, like, they just want to live. It's them avoiding death, them escaping death. It's not them gaining anything. And I think it's weird, like, really cool that the author, like, cues in on that. I don't know if that was Frank's interpretation or not when he made that kind of bit, but I really love them bringing that up. And that seems, that, like, brings broad implications to me for, like, what's going to happen to the Fremen. And, like, they would choose that. I'm like, it's an interesting little bit. They would choose an avoidance of death. Nothing else there. Long live the fighters.
That's pretty good.
Now, for their entire history, the Fremen fought against change. But with Pardot Kynes, many of the Fremen actively started to seek to change their world.
Ooh.
Again, that's the kind of switch he has. And why I'm very much warming up to, like, yeah, Pardot was a poison. Pardot was bad. I wanted him to be the good faith actor here, the gleaming white knight. But
I feel like the Imperium's just the bad guys here in the Fremen tale.
That who was?
The Fremen? Or the Imperium is just the bad guy here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, they would have been totally happy continuing what they were doing.
I don't know if you do recall, I brought this up in the very beginning of, like, one, this isn't a happy ending story. Mm-hmm. Two, this is a bit of a white savior story. And it's not really a savior either. But it is very much people just coming in and running amok. And just messing with things. There's no, like, almost there's no moral we're going to pull out of this tale when we're done. I don't know what the, what we're supposed to be like, oh, I'm glad this is the lesson I've learned from
Dune. Love an episode, like, best stab at the moral of the story.
Yeah, oh my God. Oh, can't wait for you to Frank's last line in the book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're going to play that clip of,
I did that on purpose.
But this continues, and this is one of the sections I considered striking, Mike, from the record and not telling you, but I'm going to read it aloud here. When Paul Moadib was actually able to make these changes real, the balance between philosophy and reality was destroyed.
Ooh.
The second of these elements, isolation. I don't know if you want to touch back of how Paul did that, but I can't really elaborate on it.
Okay.
Okay, but that is referring to the environment changing.
Right.
Paul was able to, like...
Are they going
to
try and... Is it... Oh, man, okay.
The balance between philosophy and reality was destroyed.
I don't even know how to interpret that.
Yeah. Do you want me to really hold your hand through it? There are some clues I can point out that we passed.
I don't want you to.
Okay, okay.
I like to think that I've got a pretty decent shot at the guessing game here for Dune.
Yeah.
Between philosophy and reality, do they succeed? Do they actually, like, turn this planet into a hospitable place?
Well, that's a tough one for me to answer for you if you don't want me to, like, point out to the previous.
If it's not the answer to what you're talking about, then I don't want to.
I would say your answer is going to be from a previous scene in Dune that we passed. Paul has specifically told us about this. And I don't know. I don't want to, like, belabor this too long. We'll spend minutes and minutes of me, like, just teasing you.
Yeah,
If you can't pull something up right now, we're going to move past it.
Oh, give it to me one more time.
It's Paul would have told us exactly how he would have done this. It was a plan he pitched. It got shot down, but he did pitch it.
Was this the one when we were talking to Liet?
Yes, it was.
And, like, hey, I'll just bring this to the Emperor and, like, blackmail him, basically.
No, Paul told him, like, if I was on the throne, I could, like, just give
yeah,
this
I've got
to
the
you.
Money and I can just, like, yeah.
And Kynes was appalled by that. That's disgusting. That's not how this works. It's not what we're here to do. That's going to be, like, a way Paul sees in the future of, like, these are my possibilities for it. And at the very least, Paul is going to be the one who's, like, finally pulls a string that's, like, toppling.
So then why did Liet agree to it then?
Liet, he didn't, what did he agree to?
Well, in the heat of the moment, they're under Harkonnen attack, and it seems like, I've made up my mind, and then he saves Paul.
Mm-mm. Paul told him, I will give my life for you. That was it, pretty much. Paul offered his life in exchange.
Mm.
And Liet, right, that was, Paul threw out the previous offer. He saw that he offended Liet, he doubled back, and then he was like, I give you my loyalty. That's the coin you want.
All right.
That's the coin I offer. Okay. And then right there, Liet was like, oh, I love this kid. Oh, I hate this. I really love this kid. Because it was just like what Leto would have done in that scenario. the Leto wouldn't have fucked up and made the first offer. Yeah. Like, I'll give you what you want. I can buy it. I'll have some money. And one of the
but Paul, trust fund doesn't.
I was gonna say, yeah, it was also Paul buying it with money he didn't have.
Yeah.
That was like, I'll get money eventually. I'll write an IOU for you right now. And kind of like, you worthless piece of shit. Like,
Imperium MasterCard.
Mm-hmm. But instead, he gives him the one thing he does have to give Kynes. Right. My life. That's the only thing a Fremen, I think, sees you having ownership of.
That, I mean, that's what has worth to the Fremen.
Yeah, yeah, value to the, like, yeah, that's the,
even if you can't contribute, your life will at least give value to the tribe.
Yes, exactly. Like, we have a way of, like, converting this fund and exemplifying on it. So, that, this is when Paul had that plan, he had that thought, that Paul is going to be the one who affects our environment eventually. I will say, he doesn't make it a green world. We don't get there. He's not that good. But you do know way down, we eventually, like, Rakkus gets a different name, post-God Emperor and stuff.
That's right.
We do go through, like, a green phase way down the road. There'll be open rivers and this and that. And then we'll go right back to Desert Mike, and you're going to be like, what happened? Like, Frank doesn't tell us. We gloss over it in some time jumps. Now, the second of these elements, isolation, started to seriously change with the arrival of House Atreides on Arrakis. For Duke Leto and then Paul Moadib, the Fremen were a potential army to be used in their political intrigues off-world.
Yep.
And so you see, we could not have had this discussion even before the Hawat chapter, really.
Yeah.
I needed that reveal to come for, like, Leto was going to use them. He wanted... I
mean, we kind of already knew that. He's like, hey, why don't you get in with the Fremen? Why don't we use them to, like, do a raid somewhere? I'm sure they'd be great with that.
Yeah, but, like... I
don't think he understood or respected enough of their culture as it was.
Leto?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just say he didn't have the chance. I think he was making every overture to, though.
I mean, I guess you're right. Maybe he didn't get the chance. He was, like, kind of pressed on time.
We were waiting for Duncan. Duncan was only with them for, like, a week. Well, I guess, or the
month.
Yeah, the month coming over, and well, and the crossing, whatever. Yeah. So that was in there. But I was saying, for, like, his report back, it didn't seem like Duncan ever got the chance to, because we pulled him off of that duty, put him on this spying thing, and then the shit went to hell. So I think Leto was making roads to it, but he would never have been as respectful as Paul is. But Paul is only disrespectful because he needs to be part of their culture now.
He doesn't have a choice.
Right. Paul might not have been if he just ascended to Duke while in Arrakeen or anything like that. There's a lot of variables in there for it. But at the same point, like, yeah, I don't know where we would have gotten. I think Leto would have gotten an army, though. I think Stilgar would have joined up.
All right.
If not, just for killing some Harkonnens. Come on.
I don't know.
But he respected would that him.
He would have respected him, but is that for, like, the benefit of the tribe there? Like, going off-world? Like, all your water is... The tribe's water is basically going to be shed there.
But we know they did go off-world. They went on that raid to Harko. Did? Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah, to Harko. He told Gurney to go get some Fremen. They would want to... Maybe they'd be happy to go on the Razzia. I guess I
don't think it was ever confirmed if they went.
Okay, though. It wasn't confirmed, but he did. It was heavily alluded that they would go and make the offer to them. I don't think.
Is it in the encyclopedia that happened? Though?
No, no. Like,
I guess, think you're just assuming that they did that
because he told them to go get them.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean he did.
Maybe
he couldn't.
I'm not going to argue this with you. I just think there's no point. Neither of us have anything to go off of. But, like, why wouldn't you want to assume the Fremen went?
What benefit do the Fremen have to go off world?
To go to Harko and kill Harkonnens on their home world. I think that's probably worth something. Who knows what you get back in return? You know, there could be just honor in that respect. Things like that, like dealing a death blow to your enemy.
I don't know. It's hard to say.
Who knows?
Ultimately, Liet would have had to be.
No. And think of also, like, you're going there to destroy spice they took from your world. They took that spice belongs to you, your god. Maybe there's sort of like a religious component we could work into there. But it's a whole, there's no point in us fleshing out Mike. Either way, they do eventually go off world. Paul's creation of the Fedaiken and their subsequent battles on many thousands of planets. So we can forget about Harka, Mike, because I got other worlds I could talk of that I know they went to. What do you want to say?
Okay, fair. Yeah. But so the Fedaiken didn't exist until Paul created them.
Yeah.
So they're the Fremen with the weirding way.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, that I can't confirm that for you either. All they're ever referred to are Muad'Dib's death commandos. They only come about once Muad'Dib's on the scene, which is why I would assume they are taught the weirding way of like, are basically the prophet's bodyguards. Especially like they're always around. I thought that
they were Paul. They were a thing before Paul.
Because it was a glossary word for it.
Right.
Yeah. No, they are the first time we get Fedakin are the ones we've just met, and all of a sudden we got captains, we got guards. Like, what do you mean?
He said Fedakin.
Fedakin. A few different ones.
I think this episode's actually airing before that one. So we'll get to hear a little argument about the pronunciation of Fedakin.
Oh, post. Yeah. Nice. Well, it'll be just as confusing. So I try them and sample them all. So, like I said, they went on many thousands of planets. And, like, this forever changed the ways in which the Fremen saw the universe and their relationship to it.
Okay.
So you're going to get the phenomenon of, like, Stilgar is going to go to a world with an ocean. Stilgar is going to stand on the shores of an ocean.
I wonder
and look out at an infinite horizon of water. And then water will start to fall from the sky on him when it rains.
And from his eyes.
Yeah. Oh, dude, he starts crying.
I bet.
Yeah.
I bet.
Yeah. It's crazy. And this happens to all the Fremen. Majority, you know, all these ones that go out for the battles and are like scourging across the universe. They're seeing things they never imagined before, things they don't have words for.
Right.
On every myriad world out there, that's going to undermine how they view everything. But when we go back to the mystique that Paul is going to need to be building for how you build a super soldier in the Dune world, because it seems like it's a very set process, everybody knows. We're going to look back and say Arrakis was, you know, what is a God created Arrakis to train the faithful.
Oh,
we're going to leave this world and we're going to leave it behind. But I need to justify that world for creating me. I need to have a reason why I went through such harshness, why I didn't get to enjoy all these luxuries, because you're not worthy like I am.
I'm curious to see what kind of person Paul turns into growing up.
Yeah.
Seems like he's going down a weird path.
Mike, I think there's another person you should want to follow, because I told you he shows up in the next book. Farouk.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we will meet Farouk after the jihad.
I'm glad that
you're going to meet old man Farouk. He's going to make tea. He's
still sweeping.
No, he's got someone to sweep for him, Mike.
Yes!
I'm pretty sure he does have like a little helper. But we go in, I'm pretty sure in like one of the early chapters, we go have tea with him.
That sounds awesome.
Or maybe it's probably coffee. It's probably spiced coffee.
It's probably spiced coffee.
Yeah, a little Farouk's going to show up. So I think you should be interested in like, how is his perception of the war?
That would be great. Mm-hmm. I was there. I sweat for Muad'Dib when he first came in. Yes.
I hope he has like a mantle and that broom is over the mantle. You see that there? I swept the landing before the Syedina came out. There wasn't a single speck of dust. Check the Tau. Now, Mike, we're actually really close to the end of this here.
Oh.
Thus, just as the flowering of Arrakis ended the environmental strictures the Fremen had lived under, the extensive travels to and battles on other worlds ended the philosophical view they had once held. So it just shatters the last of their culture. Is that like kind of sweeping jihad over the universe? And my last little bit for you, Mike. The physical and spiritual changes wrought by Paul Muad'Dib ended by killing both Shai Hulud and the Fremen. Without the unique circumstances that had nurtured both, neither could continue.
Oh, what?
That it takes all of them together. Paul couldn't exist without the Fremen, without Shai Hulud, without that, without this. You needed them all. It's sort of like how Pardot padded the way for Paul coming in. Mm-hmm. Paul couldn't have hit the Fremen before they had this idea of the flowering in them. They would have been killed outright for their water. It all needed to happen in this very precise order for them to be manipulated and like unleashed on the universe.
It literally is a perfect storm.
Mm-hmm. Of like, and oh my God, that just brings me back to Kynes accident and error are like the only constant things in the universe.
Ah.
Like, yeah. For all the planning the Bene Gesserit and the Imperium have like enacted, how much control they've tried to exert over like the Milky Way system. Nope. It's all undone by the meeting of Paul and Stogar, essentially. Or Amuerte, depending on how you pull the threads of history.
You think Amuerte had prescience? He was just like, I need to change this.
I hope so. I want him to. But that is the end of Fremen cultural development up to the year 10191 after Guild.
Very specific title. And aside from all of my interruptions and interjections, I thought it was very smooth.
Oh, it would have been so much more boring, Mike, if you just let me read that constant. Like, so I appreciate it.
Well, in tradition with our B2Ds, you know what's next.
Oh,
you?
Mike, there's only one thing I can go back to at this point.
It's time for the glossary game! I got one for you. I think this will be good. I think the people who, like I said, we're recording this prior to chapter 40. So I mentioned this in that chapter.
Oh!
I don't think you're going to remember. Okay.
I like that.
All right. So your word is Acarso.
Acarso.
Acarso. A-K-A-R-S-O.
Okay, okay. Give me a clue as best you can.
All right. Acarso. Let's see here. I'm pretty sure we met this within the first 10 chapters of Dune.
Okay. Okay. 10 is very broad. Acarso.
That's like also very specific because this is prior to like anything hitting the fan.
Yeah, yeah, but it like straddles that gap between Caladan and Arrakis.
True.
Which can be like kind of misleading for it.
I'll give you one more clue.
Oh, I'll definitely take one more clue. It's the between two dunes, Mike. Come on.
It was on Arrakis.
Okay, I appreciate that. So now I'm down to chapters 7 through 10. all right, let me hold up, try to flesh out what those were if I can reach back all that way.
Yeah.
Because it would have been unpacking in the lobby was like, and then Mapes comes up. Then we go, then we do Paul, right?
Mapes and then...
I think it's Paul and then the conservatory?
No, it's Lady Jessica and Yui. Then it's Paul, then it's the conservatory.
Got you. And then back to outside. Yep, yep. Or no, yeah, yeah. All right, Acarso. I want to say it's when, like, I want to think that it's when Yui and Jessica are talking and looking out that window then, but I'm trying, I think I know everything that happens around there. Is it, okay, is it like, is it a person in some manner?
No, it's not.
No? Okay. I'm definitely like willing to sacrifice the point at that point. Yeah, then I'm going to say it is like a cart that moves things.
Ooh, okay.
Well, and yeah, maybe it's covered.
Do you want to hit Control F on there and read that sentence?
Wow. Yeah, it's in the conservatory chapter.
There we go.
Nice. No, I would have never guessed that. So
read me that sentence.
I got to pull the sentence up for you, Mike. Potted plants and low bloom trees stood all about. She recognized a mimosa, a flowering quince, a sodagi, green blossom plantacenta, green and white striped Acarso. Now roses, even roses.
We had plantacenta on here.
Mm-hmm.
We had sodagi. Sodagi.
Is it a made up flower?
Yeah.
Ah, very cool.
At least I assume so, because the exact definition, and this is why I talked about it last time in the Gazetteer, briefly. We talked about a planet native to Sakun of 70 Afioki A, a characterized by most oblong leaves. Its green and white stripes indicate the constant multiple condition of parallel active and dormant chlorophyll regions.
That's the Acarso?
Yeah. It's got striped leaves, and the stripes change colors.
Very, very
because,
cool.
Because, like, some of the chlorophyll will be dormant, and then it'll be active while the other ones take a rest, and then it'll switch.
Oh, okay. Pretty cool flower.
I don't know what Acarso does, but I do remember when we were talking about the Gazetteer. Maybe it's not the one that airs next week. Maybe is this the, because it was off of Afioki A.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, Gady Prime is the only plant we've done so far.
Yeah, but it was part of Afioki A, I remember. Was it 70 Afioki? It might have been 40 Afioki. I don't fucking remember, dude. Wine! Sand Creek. But Sykkun is a planet that's mentioned several times, but just offhandedly, like, we know it belongs in this system, probably.
Oh, wow.
This is the only time I think it's mentioned in the books.
I was going to say, like, that one is completely foreign to me. Not something I can recall.
Yeah. That's why I knew it was going to be kind of a tricky one. But I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. No, that is really sweet. I'm really impressed. You got me. You stumped me.
I'm getting you.
Who would have guessed I didn't know a glossary word?
There's only so many to choose from, Derek. I gotta be shifty.
So true. So true. Oh, but I think with that, Mike, is there anything else? We got any pending business?
I don't think so.
Are we pretty much out of here?
I think, how's the bottle doing? Yep, the bottle's wine. Empty. It's time. Usually this is the part where we do the plugs, but you guys, you're Spice Worldler. You know how to find us. You're already here. Part of the CH. You can also message us here on Patreon as well.
Yeah, please. Send us any
distrons.
Taking a few swings at words. Let us know any cool books you're reading, you guys. Let us know any Dune questions you have or anything else from the encyclopedia that you want to see.
All right. Well, I guess that's it.
Before we close, we say a big thank you to you guys.
Without you, the spice can't flow. You win. You don't have to convince anyone else.
Oh, God. Okay, my guy, I agree.
I'm going to have to clean that up later.
You want to carry it? I thought you want to clean it up.
No, that's fine. We'll go. Keep going.
Play it as a land.
I'm going to get yelled at.
Oh, no.
They pick it up.
Oh. Oh, you broke it. Oh, okay.
That's I broke it.
This is a candle holder, right?
Yeah, but. Okay. Yeah.
This one's safe. The one that went on the ground is good. The one that didn't hit the ground is broken.
Any luck, Megan won't remember how many we had.